person, that's what a person does, is he finds, is able to associate with devotees and avoid the association of materialistic people. Right? Socialization. That's a very important process to us. That's why this perspective of social psychology is very relevant to what happens in ISKCON. And the idea of, so, well, Boysen goes on, I'll give you a few more places about this social psychology. Anyway, we ought to see this sentence now. Let's say again. And those constructive transformations of the personality which we recognize as religious experience. So this is something that's going on inside the individual, but it's really about the individual's social relations. The individual is relieved of the sense of isolation and is brought into harmony with that which is supreme in his hierarchy of loyalties. Supreme in his hierarchy of loyalties means, for Boysen, God. It's a kind of social definition of God, that which is supreme, or what stands for God, or what at least ought to be God. So let me just...
He didn't actually have a sangha to associate with the Western...
No, Boysen was... he was raised a very strict Presbyterian. Those Presbyterians that only sang the Psalms of David, no other songs were permitted, no other human-made hymns. Very strict Presbyterian. And then he became a minister... When a congregational church, which was sort of liberal Presbyterians, so he had a very, very strict upbringing. For what I see in Boysen is a kind of Christianity that maybe didn't survive World War II by very long, actually. A very strict Protestant kind of Christianity. Yeah. He was raised very strictly. His father died at an early age by his grandfather, for whom he was named, who was a Presbyterian minister. On both sides of his family are ministers and academics. It's like a closest thing, you know, very close to what you call a Brahminical lineage going back quite some time. Professors of language, professors of natural science, and pastors and ministers. Scottish Presbyterian. With a very strong sense of sin and guilt. Calvinistic, you know. What they used to call Scotch-Irish. I have a few places here.
So his conversion was more to a more profound level of...
Boysen? Yeah, we'll see what's going on here. You should just read that thing and we'll talk about it. Yeah, what happened to him is, well, he's a very unusual person in many ways. He was on a much higher level than most of the people around, but he took things to heart that most people would have been casual about, and here's a definition of God. I shall try to show that the idea of God is the symbol of that which is supreme in the individual and social system of loyalties, and that explicitly or implicitly is operative in the lives of all men. So he has that notion. Now he talks about social psychology here. This is one of his articles I'm quoting from. He's talking about that when people undergo this experience... Now we're not going to be concerned so much with these kind of pathological experiences. The point is, what Boysen does is when he undergoes this crisis experience, He then thinks he's discovered laws of spiritual life, and he then tries to test them on people in ordinary life and find out that they describe what everyone's going through. Just with people with a mental illness, they're just accelerated by a crisis. But normal people also go through them. That's why it's going to be of interest to us. Here he says, but usually in these experiences, people's voices talk to them, which they usually think of as God or something like that. They hear voices telling them to do different things. There's a brief account of Boysen's own experience in this material, which you should have read by tomorrow. The significance of the experience of feeling oneself face to face with God may be considered in the light of Mead's theory. This is George Herbert Mead, the M-E-A-D, the founder of social psychology. Mead's theory of the social basis of the personality. According to that theory, the personality is merely the subjective aspect of culture. It is the internalization within the individual of the organized social attitudes made possible through the use of language. Well, sociology is, the human being in society. Social psychology says it's also society inside the human being. So aspects of the social structure we bring into ourselves through the use of language. A consequence of that, then he describes this in detail, technical stuff. A consequence of this view, which Mead did not develop, but which seems to follow, is that the idea of God is the symbol under which loyalty to the group is raised to the level of the universal and abiding. In other words, in all time and all space. My group is not just this little group, but actually is somehow or other represents everyone. Just like we were saying the other day, Vaishnava is not an upadhi. When Prabhupada says Vaishnava, he doesn't mean some sect in India. We mean all living entities, actually. Right? We try to become free from material designation, and what we are talking about when we talk about Krishna consciousness, we don't think about some little thing that we're doing. We think something that applies to everyone at all times and all places. Yes?
For some people in India, Vaishnava is an upadhi.
Of course, I know that. They're wrong, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, of course, the Mayavadis think like that.
I was on a train and the Gujarati man who was drinking whiskey and said he was a Vaishnava.
Yeah. Well, also, scholars put Vaishnavism in sectarian movements as opposed to Mayavadis. Anyway, he's talking about God. Let me go about the social definition of God. It, that is the idea of God, stands for that in his social experience which the individual most admires and loves, that to which he gives his allegiance and by which he judges himself. It represents, thus, a reality of vital importance to every living man, whether he calls himself religious or not. Well, again, it stands for that in the social experience. So what is in our social experience, at least as devotees? We have certain people, individuals, whom we most admire and love. Well, who is that? Aside from those in the category of God, it's pure devotees. We have our Diksha Guru, we have Shiksha Gurus, we have previous Acharyas, we have the six Goswamis. And don't we have songs praying to be admitted into the association of the six Goswamis? If you can't be more explicit than we get about this, huh? So those individuals one most admires and loves, to which we give our allegiance, and by which he judges himself. In other words, I go around thinking every day, what is Srila Prabhupada thinking of me? I don't have to think, what do I think of myself? I mean, what's important is, what does Srila Prabhupada think of me? What judgment is he passing on me? That's the individual my most admire and love, to whom I give my allegiance. And does he represent God? You bet he does. Sakshat Harihitva. So what people, because people are looking for God, they're looking for that individual who can represent God. The tragedy in the material world is those people who ought to represent God and turn out to be fallible gods. There's a definition of love. A person is love is someone who has a religion with a fallible God, talking about material sexual love. I think it's Borges' definition. To be in love is to have a... Borges, the Argentinian writer. To be in love is to be in a religion with a fallible God. And Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. See, the people were explicit in those days. Juliet calls Romeo the god of my idolatry. So, in various ways, people who don't, because it's natural enough, it's our dharma to surrender, we're looking for somebody who represents God. Boyson defines love. He uses something from the philosopher Hawking, William Ernest Hawking. He defines love as desire to be joined with the idealized other than self. To be united with the idealized other than self. And Boyson sees a continuum between, you know, sexual love and between kama and prema, which there is. Yeah.
I confuse it. So you were concerned with idolatrous relationships, so on.
Uh-huh.
Can you give the definition of idolatry?
Yeah. I'll give our definition. Idolatry is where you've replaced a god with something else that doesn't represent God. To worship something that is not God as God is idolatry. That's what idolatry means. Yeah, to have a fallible God. To have a finite rather than an infinite God.
To have a fallible understanding of God. Because they're like somebody comes along and they see Krishna on the altar, but they're worshiping him, you know, as an idol.
Yeah, sure. Sure. So then we say they're not really worshiping Krishna. Prabhupada said if you do it without love, then it can become idolatry, even though it's a real deity. Yeah. The Mayavadi idea is idolatrous.
So there's a fallibility in his thinking process.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. Uh-huh. Any other questions about the material so far? I hope we'll get our way around into this. I want you to, you can have read this first selection here. Then we'll get to this chart. That's the next thing you got. I included the whole chapter that explains this chart. Are people finding Boyson difficult to read? Somebody were complaining about it. I think it's fairly clear as things go. If you have any questions or problems about anything in the reading, let's bring it up. Anyway, this idea of sin as isolation, certainly that's the way it's experienced. For us as devotees, is to be isolated, either self-isolated or actually, you know, and usually when somebody wants to commit sinful activities, they leave the society of devotees. They're not part of it. They don't belong anymore. And one wants to, if you're still desiring to be rectified, somehow or other one has to become readmitted or reaccepted or reunited into that society. Yeah?
When we preach to a person who is so-called normal and we dismantle his whole foundation for reasoning,
yeah,
presenting our philosophy, but we don't give Sadhu Sangha, which may be a church, a short encounter or just keep it open, then we cause actually a great havoc. And he has some of our great mental strength.
No, because at least we're hoping that actually if we're successful, usually to actually cause a, you know, destruction of the foundation of the reasoning, usually takes a number of encounters. Well, then what happens is somehow or other he finds the society of devotees, doesn't it? Because there's somebody else operating on this, and that's Krishna. We always give people the holy name, and somehow or other those people get guided to meet devotees. We've always seen that, you know, by the grace of Krishna, one gets a spiritual master. By the grace of the spiritual master, one gets Krishna. So Krishna always ends up leading people.
How about the other verses? The new socialization of the person is given, and then gradually the
not two brothers.
No, no, not about the two brothers, about all the name, I think it was named actually. The introduction where he talks about his schizophrenic episode. First, let's backtrack a little bit. Any questions about the stuff we talked about, social psychology? Yesterday. So, other people?
I have a question about who George Fox is. I've never heard of
him. Oh, George Fox is the founder of the Quakers.
Oh.
Yeah. He kept a journal, or he wrote afterwards his memoirs of what happened to him when he went nuts. And, you know, he had what he called openings where he received divine dictation and so many realizations. And he discusses him in one chapter in detail from his journal. Clearly, that if Fox had been alive today, he would have been put in a mental hospital on Boysen's Day, even. And he has a very interesting chapter called George Fox Among the Doctors, what the doctors of divinity would make of the doctors of medicine. And so on. How they would interpret his experience. And, so Fox is somebody who had, you know, what looked from the outside to be a schizophrenic episode, had so many revelations or insights, and when he was finished, he managed to convince a huge number of people that they were true. This is called another way of socializing the experience. And some people have that, and they, you know, they're just a lone, ranting lunatic. Other people have a similar thing, and they convince a lot of other people that are true, and then you have a religious leader.
Mormons.
Yeah? Mormons. And many, many people you'll see the same. He discusses in this chapter Jeremiah, Ezekiel, George Fox. We call some successful explorers, that is, explorers of the inner world. He discusses the case of George Fox, Paul Bunyan, author of Pilgrim's Progress, John Bunyan, who's a contemporary of George Fox, Emanuel Swedenborg, who's the founder of the church, the Swedenborgian Church, it's still going on, talk to spirits from Mars and so on, among other things. Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Saul, we talked about a little bit already. So, let me just go back here.
But does it always have to be so dramatic?
No, these are dramatic occasions. You see, what he's talking about is these schizophrenic occasions like this is when the living human document is opened up at the inner day of judgment. Right? So that in a crisis, everything comes open. But many people don't have crises, and yet they have similar sorts of, go through the same kinds of dynamics in a slow way. However, I think that religious crises are fairly frequent. As we'll see, if you look at this chart that you have, which you now have two copies of it.
Oh, could we have a definition of schizophrenia?
No, I'll give you a definition of schizophrenia because nobody knows what it is. But it's usually a constellation of an acute psychotic episode. And it usually has a constellation of various sorts of things associated with it, of a delusional system. And in those episodes, it's very plastic. There are ideas of self-sacrifice, death, world disaster, mystical identification, rebirth, reincarnation, prophetic mission, all these sorts of things that take place. And yeah, most of us who've been in temples have had guys come in with this, in the middle of those kinds of things. You think you're a messiah or God, you have to save the world, there's a huge catastrophe about to happen. A lot of times it's extreme paranoia, you're being persecuted, the CIA is implanted, or the Beatles. I knew a schizophrenic guy that the Beatles were at a conspiracy, there's a big global conspiracy and everybody's out to get you. This is paranoid schizophrenia. Things like that. But generally it's marked by a person who's what everybody else thinks is delusional. Voices are talking to them. The inner voice is talking to you, which is often taken as the voice of God or some kind of divine being is telling you to do things.
Mm-hmm. Some of this is like drug-induced,
also. We're not talking about it. It happens without drugs. No. LSD was supposed to be a schizophrenic mimic.
What's your take on LSD?
Talk about that later. Trying to avoid it.
I have another who was running a movement for 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
He was diagnosed with schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's improving.
Mm-hmm. If you look at that chart, you see there's three layers there. In the second column. And we'll discuss this later, but the interesting thing about this, on the top, the controlling desire and the degree of awareness, one is integrative. He calls desire for response and recognition. He says another way to put it is desire for self-realization. Recognition means by recognition of those people whose opinions really count, such as one's spiritual master in our case. And response means some kind of reciprocation from those people. And the degree of awareness is clear. At the bottom, segmental, he gets that term from somebody named Kemp. It is to be noted that the term segmental is derived from Kemp's theory of the autonomic functions of the personality and their association with segments of the spinal cord. What's autonomic mean? Those instinctive reactions. We would say lower chakras. The lower regions of the spinal cord. Various.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. So the controlling desire, segmental, means having to do with the base instincts, as they used to be called. Right? And so the degree of awareness associated that with is oblivion. You just lose yourself in desires like this. So you have, and then the middle is conflicting, you're in between. So I submit what you have here is goodness, passion, and ignorance. So in other words, you have, if we're talking about these acute episodes, let's call them schizophrenia. You have schizophrenia in the mode of goodness, schizophrenia in the mode of passion, and schizophrenia in the mode of ignorance. Now the trouble is you don't usually see schizophrenia in the mode of goodness these days. But schizophrenia in the mode of goodness will be something like George Fox or something like that. Well, let me just, in talking about his schizophrenic episodes.
Are we saying then that all functional mental disorders are schizophrenic?
No, not at all. I'm not trying to, you know, talk about all mental disorders, but there's a certain type of mental disorder which is classified as a mental disorder, which Boysen says are attempts at self-spiritual healing. I believe this to be true. Before I became a devotee, let me just say, before I became a devotee, you know, I had certain experiences. They weren't that acute like this, but that were like the kind of things. Before I met Prabhupada, I knew a savior was coming. this is independently of drugs. I once had a kind of extraordinary episode that had some of these things before I was a devotee that came from studying the ontological argument for the existence of God, which shows that God is such a being who exists so truly that he cannot be conceived not to exist. I had the realization that this was true and had what would look like a face-to-face encounter with God and certain truths, and for 3 days I could have saved the world. I mean, I just... you know, and then I dropped out. It wasn't schizophrenic, and it wasn't drug-boosted. And there were other things going on, certain crises happening, and it all came together. I think these things are fairly common, actually. When you look at Boysen's autobiography, he went through a series of episodes, of which this was really the one that landed him in the hospital. He had pre-acute episodes of dealing with crises. If you look at this episode
I'm just wondering about sending it schizophrenia.
That's just a label, huh? Labeled schizophrenia, labeled dimension. What do they call? They may have another label now. Bipolar disorder. No, that's something else.
But I was always understood that schizophrenia was like split personality.
That's what it literally means. But at Boysen's days, it was also called dementia praecox, meaning a dementia mental disorder characteristic of adolescence. Because usually this happens, the onset of these kind of things is adolescence. Yeah.
Whereas you're not saying that this covers the whole range of mental disorders.
Absolutely not.
But at the same time, you are postulating that this particular section of mental illness that he's talking about is more naturally going to occur with those who accept it at a very high standard of moral values.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's extremely pertinent for his kind.
Yeah, I'm not really talking about this kind of pathology in ISKCON. Boysen starts with this because he thinks that through this episode he has some insight into the depths, deep structure of the human personality. This insight he then looks at ordinary life through it. So I really want to deal with ordinary life in ISKCON. But since this is the way he presents it, I would like to say that there are acute periods that people may go through. You don't have to go through them in order to make spiritual advancement.
This is gradual versus abrupt.
But this is a breakthrough, you know. People they're blocked, and then bang, there's a breakthrough like this. And when you look at that, the generic description that he gives schizophrenia, here that these ideas, self-sacrifice, death, world disaster, mystical identification, I'm just a little part of a whole, sometimes I identify myself with a whole and I'm immensely important, otherwise other times I'm a zero factor, I'm insignificant, rebirth, reincarnation, very, very common in these things. People have ideas of rebirth. Prophetic mission. Now, every single one of these is also characteristic of Arjuna's experience in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. You might notice that. Every single one of them. So I would say that what there is a continuum of experiences. Let's call it a continuum of experiences. And depending upon the quality of the people involved in the situation, they can actually be genuine revelation, or else there's some kind of revelation that only comes through in a confused, obscure, mixed up, it's a revelation that doesn't take. To put it in our terminology, you may be dealing with higher levels of reality. I think you're dealing with higher levels of reality. I mean, I think, you know, these things, but whether it's God, whether it's demigod, or whether it's demons, depends on where you're at. That's what I think. There are things we talk about. There are people that study religious experience, and I had courses in, you know, the mystical experience, where people go through all different religious traditions and they find, hey, there are Mayavadis everywhere. I think this is another kind of universal religious experience. I even hate to call it religious, I just think it's experience, but anyway. It's religious experience.
Transcendental.
Yeah, transcendental experience. At least it's something beyond this word world. Now, I'm going to show you something. He talks about the inner day of judgment. And actually, Boisen, when he talks about this, in his autobiography, he describes his episode in much greater detail than is in that you've read about. And it's precipitated in him with this rejection by this woman that he wanted to marry. This went on all through his life until her death in 36. A Christian worker of the finest type. This other thing. Anyway, we'll get into that issue. But he's describing some of the things that went on. He says, by nightfall, my head was all in a whirl. He's in the hospital now. It seemed to be the day of judgment. And all humanity came streaming in from four different directions, as in the accompanying diagram. He saw a center, and then people were coming in and around and like this. He saw this gate. People were coming from all directions in this way. They're coming out and going back in. He saw this. This is his experience. From four different directions, as in the company diagram, they came into a common center. Then they were brought before the judgment seat. But it seemed to be an automatic sort of judgment. Each individual judged himself. There were certain passwords, and they made certain choices. Each person had three chances. A difficult right the first time affair, a second choice which involved an element of sacrifice and meant that one would become a woman and not a man. So the idea of rebirth and reincarnation and a moral choice. The other was only a seeming chance which sent one at once to the lower regions. These lower regions did not seem to be anything very fixed. The whole thing was like a vast circulatory system. Each human being was like a corpuscle in the bloodstream, and we all kept going around and around and around and around. All the time, choices were being made, and some were being sent below and some above. I had at the time the idea that my consciousness had gone to the lower level. Sometimes something I thought was short-circuited. And then one night he's with angels, and the next night he's with witches, and, you know, he's going through this whole thing. He describes this as the inner day of judgment. Now, the day of judgment, after I became a devotee and I read through the Gospels again, my first intuition was this day of judgment was, in fact, the universal form. It's described in St. Mark 13, and there's a longer description in Matthew. He says... In Mark, he says, in those days after the suffering, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. Cosmic catastrophe. And the stars will fall from the sky and the powers of the universe will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man, this is in the third person, coming in the clouds with a great army, as an army, and with glory. Then he will send his angels and gather the chosen ones from the four winds, from the utmost part of the earth to the utmost part of the heavens. So this is the description there. It's very brief. In Matthew, there's a longer description. This is Matthew 25. When the Son of Man comes in His glory, and all the holy angels with Him, then He will sit upon the throne of His glory. And all nations will gather before Him, and He will separate them one from another, just as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And He will set the sheep at His right and the goats at His left. And then the king will say to those at His right, this is taken to be Jesus, but notice it's in the third person. This is Jesus describing His vision according to the gospel. Will say to those at His right, come, you blessed of My Father, inherit the kingdom which has been prepared for you from the foundation of the world. And then there goes this famous passage, for I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, you clothed me. I was sick, you visited me. In prison, you came to me. And then the righteous will say, well, we didn't see you. When were you there? And He said, even as you do in the least of these, you do to me, right? Then He will say to those that is left, go away from me, you cursed, to the everlasting fire which is prepared for the adversary, usually interpreted as Satan, for the adversary and his angels. For I was hungry and you did not feed me, and so on. And these shall go into everlasting torment, and the righteous into everlasting life. So the Christian idea is usually there'll be the end of time, and there'll be a day of judgment. So the Kala Rupa has also that aspect. And I think that's what I think this Day of Judgment is. It's some partial vision of the Kala Rupa, the universal form. The Lord is present. I have come to engage all people. You're on the battlefield and there's good and there's bad, right? They're divided in this way. And there's a big mission to be established. Arjuna's to be an instrument. That's definitely what it sounds like is there in this kind of thing. Whatever the case may be, this is... how it appears. Let me just read his... there's another passage here.
But it fit in with Yamaraj. That's more individual.
Yeah, Yamaraj, in a sense, from our point of view, I think from a spiritual point of view, the Day of Judgment is going on all the time. Yamaraj is the judge of at least the sinful people. But he doesn't really separate... the two off, does he?
They're already guilty.
They're already guilty.
That's how they should be punished.
Anyway, this is his hypothesis in this book about these episodes. The study which we have just made of the experiences of mental patients. Because remember, what Boyson did is after he went through this, he then got himself in a chaplain in a hospital with the records of people and looked to what people were going through to see if what was happened to other people was happening, was the same thing that happened to him. And then he looked to see what led to people come out better, stay the same, or come out worse. You know? And there's definitely for him certain attributes or traits of character which made the difference. The study which we have made of the experience of mental patients has furnished us with a working hypothesis with which we may now approach the experiences of our men of religious genius. That's according to that hypothesis, certain types of mental disorder are not in themselves evils, but problem-solving experiences. They are attempts at reorganization in which the entire personality, to its bottommost depths, is aroused, and its forces marshaled to meet the danger of personal failure and isolation. According to this hypothesis, the primary evil in functional disorders lies in the realm of personal relationship, particularly to that which is for most men represented by the idea of God. The psychotic individual is characteristically one who, accepting the standards and ideals implanted by his early guides, has found within himself such marked deviation that he has been unable to face the inner bar of judgment except at the cost of severe emotional disturbance. In the more malignant type, the sufferer has made no attempt to do so. He has either drifted along unresistingly, or else he has distorted his beliefs in order to maintain his sense of security. The acute disturbances, on the other hand, arise out of awareness of danger. The sufferer is facing what for him are the great and abiding issues of life and death and of his own relationship to the universe. He thus shows invariably marked religious concern. Such disturbances, as we have seen, tend either to make or break. Even those whose beliefs have been warped in the effort to interpret some unhappy life situation in terms favorable to their self-respect may, through the disturbance, find release and emerge into new life and hope. The emotional disturbance thus serves to break up malignant sets and attitudes and to make possible a new synthesis. That's his hypothesis about these mental illnesses, including his own. That's his thesis here. So if we look, let me just tell you a little bit about Boysen. Boysen and his elderly life. They finally published something just 5 years before he died, actually, which was finally what he calls his case record, where he lays everything out. And as I said, if we look at the way he was brought up, it may not be the way most of us were brought up, but it's definitely the way we want to bring up all the kids who were born into this movement. Because what we see in him is very intense, strict religious upbringing, a great idealizing of his parents and teachers, father and mother. And also, in his case, Boysen, in his case, describe what he describes as... in adolescence, but began early, a sexual hypersensitivity. But he mentions in that excerpt you read something that began when he was 4 years old, right? This is what it is. You have to excuse